You know, it was several years ago that I started a Friday morning young men's group for some of the young guys who were coming to our church, and we got together and had breakfast with some regularity. And one of the reasons I did that is to help me be a better husband. When it comes to being a husband, sometimes I'm not the best there is. It's ironic. Sometimes we've read books just about how to be a better Christian that have taught us to pray and taught us to read the Bible. Other times we've read books that are more philosophical, theological in scope, Rumors by Philip Yancey. Frequently we read books about how to be a better dad or how to be a better husband. Often when I'm reading that book, you know, the group meets, well, now it's meeting Saturday morning, but it has been Friday morning. Usually I put that off till Thursday night to read the book, you know, because I'm a premillennialist and I think the rapture might come if I would have read that, you know, before it was actually due. What would that be for, huh? So there it is. It's Thursday evening and I need to read that book. It's late. It's 10 o'clock. Maybe it's 11 o'clock and I can't find the book. And then my marriage begins to go to pot because I say, Laura, where is that book? You know how that works? You know, here's the ironic thing. She may touch it and put it where it belongs, or she may never touch it, but she always can find it when I can't. How does that work, guys? Do you have that problem? You know, I'm in a store the other day and I'm saying, so where are the Doritos? And a woman, the clerk, just reaches up and says, right here. And then she goes, men. You know? Thanks, sweetheart. I appreciate the Doritos. Yeah. Are you that way, guys? Sometimes I really have trouble seeing obvious things. I have a friend named Tom who's a hunter. A number of you are hunters as well. I like going hunting with Tom because Tom sees everything. And I can remember when I was first hunting with Tom, we were in McKean County, we're walking along with our guns, hunting for deer, doing a man thing, you know, and we were walking in from having been two different places, we're walking down this gas line, and there were like three or four times in a 100-yard walk that Tom said, shh, you know, and the first time I'm like, what? I don't see anything. You know, I didn't say it out loud, but that's my attitude, you know. And there went a grouse. He saw a grouse that was pretty far away, you know. We were hunting deer, so we didn't shoot at it. So then we walk a little more, and shh, shh. He says, and there goes a doe. What was buck season? But he saw that, and I didn't see it. And now I'm to the point when Tom says, hey, I go, what? And I'll say, I just need to borrow that pencil, you know, whatever. But it, you know, when Tom says he sees something, I know he does because he has hunter's eyes. I don't. I just don't see stuff that is pretty obvious to someone like Tom. I have mechanic's ears, though. You know, we're going down the road in the car, and I'll say to Laurel, what's that noise? She'll say, I don't hear any noise. And I'll say, listen to that noise. And it sounds like this. She says, that's the noise the car makes, honey. I said, uh-huh. No, you know what that was? That was $369. That's what that was. Yeah. I have mechanic's ears, so I can hear that. She doesn't have mechanic's ears. It's as plain as can be. It's right there. You ought to be able to hear it, but you miss it. There's hunter's eyes, there's a woman's sense of finding things, there's a mechanic's ability to hear things, and then there's also spiritual eyes. And by spiritual eyes, I mean just the ability to see something that other people might miss. And if you don't have your spiritual eyes tuned in today, and if you don't look carefully at our passage, you might miss something really important that Jesus is demonstrating in this passage. In fact, if you don't have spiritual eyes, you might think, well, if that's the way Jesus is, I don't think I respect him quite as much as I did after you read the passage today. So let's put our spiritual eyes in, and let's take a look at the passage. If you have your Bibles, open them up to Matthew chapter 15. If you didn't bring your own Bible, grab one out of a pew, and you can follow along in Matthew 15. We're going to start reading on page 971 in that pew Bible. Matthew chapter 15. Thank you, Bob, for taking care of the screen. I appreciate that. Okay. Matthew's telling the story of Jesus, and by this time, I think Jesus is pretty worn out. He's done a lot of things here, and I think he's trying to retreat from the crowds just to refresh himself a little bit. And we're going to pick this up in verse 21, and we're going to see how Matthew unfolds a very interesting incident in the life of Jesus. Verse 21. Leaving that place, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. A Canaanite woman from that vicinity came out to him crying, Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is suffering terribly from demon possession. Jesus did not answer a word. So his disciples came to him and urged him, send her away, for she keeps crying out after us. He answered, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. The woman came and knelt before him. Lord, help me, she said. He replied, it's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs. She said, yes, Lord, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. Then Jesus answered, woman, you have great faith. Your request was granted. And her daughter was healed from that very hour. Now, there's a couple things in that story that make it the kind of story that you probably wouldn't tell to someone that you were telling about Jesus for the first time. If you're going up to someone and you're saying to them, let me tell you what a good guy Jesus is and how important he is, you probably wouldn't tell a story where he ignores a woman whose daughter is sick and he has a means to heal her. You probably wouldn't tell a story where Jesus says to someone, it's not right for me to give this to a dog like you, because that's kind of what it appears that Jesus is doing here. I was thinking, this is just not the kind of story that you want to tell at all, if you're just looking with human eyes. I thought to myself as I was preparing this message, I preached through the Gospel of Mark 7 years before I came to Kerwinsville. And this story is in the Gospel of Mark. I wonder what I said in May of 1989, because I was doing then what I do now, preaching through a book of the Bible, and I came upon this story in Mark. Guess what I did with those verses? I skipped them. That's what I did in 1989. I just looked at that and said, that's too hard a story for me to deal with. Now, I have a lot of respect for God's Word, and I don't want to skip stuff. I want to treat it with honesty and with integrity and present it to you with accuracy. So this time I'm not going to skip it. I'm going to help you wrestle through it. And I think that with spiritual eyes, you'll be able to see the compassion of Jesus even in this story. Jesus' compassion is always present. His compassion is present even when it seems like he's silent. God's compassion is present even when he seems silent. This woman asked Jesus for mercy. And look at his response in verse 23. Jesus did not answer a word. He didn't answer a word. That's one of the most surprising responses to that kind of request for Jesus to give that I can imagine. I can imagine probably a dozen different things that Jesus might do when someone comes up and says, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is sick. She has demons. I can imagine a dozen things he'd do before I would ever think that he just wouldn't say anything. He just doesn't even answer her a word. She is desperate. Her demons are destroying the life of her daughter. And he has the ability to deliver a child from the grip of Satan. But Jesus doesn't answer a word. He seems to ignore her. Sound familiar? Have you ever felt that way yourself? I mean, have you ever had a time when you cried out to God and said, oh God, please do this, and this is what you heard. Listen carefully. You heard this. Silence. I think that anyone who has ever consistently gone to God in prayer has experienced times when it appears that that request fell on deaf ears. Times that it seems that he is completely ignoring us. This is one of the hardest things in a Christian life to deal with. You know, we're asking God to heal someone. It's someone we love. This guy that we're asking him to heal, use your imagination with me, this guy's a good man, good husband, leader in the church, helper in the church, young, has a ministry, has a family, and lots of people are praying for him, not just us, but people in other churches are all going to God in prayer and saying, God, please help this man, please heal him. And he's still dying. And there's silence. Now, when that happens, Doesn't it make you wonder if Jesus is even listening? It does when you're looking with human eyes. But I think when you look with spiritual eyes, you'll see that there is a larger picture than we're really only seeing a little snapshot out of the corner of it. It's kind of like, I don't know if you've seen those images online where they show you this little picture and you think, I'm not sure what that is. It looks kind of like some kind of geometric shape, and then they back it out and you see it's a horse. But you were just looking maybe at the corner of the eye of the horse, you know? When you backed it out and you saw the whole perspective, there was something that you were really missing. You see, the thing that you might miss in this story is that Jesus is actually not ignoring this woman in her faith, but he is actually drawing out her faith. He is actually giving her the ability to really express her faith on a whole different level than, oh Lord God, Son of David, help me. He's going to let her do more than that. He's got a bigger picture in mind than we're seeing when we look at the snapshot. And he kind of teaches us that God's delaying is not always God's denying. He teaches us as well that great faith and persistent faith are just about synonymous. Great faith and persistent faith, just about the same thing. I can't imagine. When the whole story is said and done, I cannot imagine this woman who sees her daughter healed at that very time, I can't imagine her going and saying, you know, this Jesus guy, I went to him to help my daughter and he wasn't going to, I really had to twist his arm. He's not always cracked up to me. No way. No way would she have felt like that, because she had the perspective of the whole picture. She saw it from beginning to end. My guess is that when it was all over, she didn't give a lot of thought to Jesus' silence. My guess is that she, when she saw the whole picture, was rejoicing. You know, there are many places where seeing the whole picture can bring a sense of satisfaction, can help bring some understanding to it. You know, I can remember when I was in, I don't know, maybe it was fifth grade or so. I can remember, maybe it was sixth grade. I had a teacher whose name was Miss Carrier. And Miss Carrier was a substitute teacher. She was only there for a few days because the regular English teacher was away, and I don't know if she was in the hospital or what was going on there. And Miss Carrier, it was her job to teach us to write an outline. Now, there's a couple things that you probably know about me. Number one, I don't have a lot of patience. Number two, I don't have a lot of time for convention in the way everyone else does things. And number three, my attention to detail is in the lowest percentile available, right? Okay. So I'm sitting there, I'm listening to Miss Carrier, and she's saying, when you do an outline, the first thing you do is Roman numeral 1. And I go, why can't I just put an A up there? Because the uppercase A is reserved for the second level of the outline, Stephen. Okay, why? Because that's the way it's done. Oh, that's the worst answer to give me. Worst answer. And I got to tell you, she probably went home that night and said, thank God I don't teach that class. That's Steve Shields, you know. I thought it was the most ridiculous thing in the world. And here was my argument. I will never use outlining when I grow up. Pause. Right now, we are wrapping up Roman numeral 1, uppercase B of this sermon. Yeah. You see, when I could only see the small picture, in my mind, when I saw the little snapshot, I'm like, this is just not right. You're wasting my time and making me do things I hate. And because I was so immature, it was an issue. Well, I got a feeling that we're that way with unanswered prayer sometimes. And that we're just seeing a snapshot. And in our immaturity, we're saying, this is such a waste of time and you're not answering. But I think that there'll be a time we'll be able to look back and we'll see the whole thing and we'll say, well, hey, that wasn't such a bad thing that God did after all. That wasn't such a bad thing after all. Because Roman numeral 1, compassion is present even when you don't see it. Roman numeral 2, compassion is present even when others discourage you and deny it. Compassion is present when you don't see it. And number two, compassion is present even when others discourage you. This passage reminds me that even good people can make you doubt God's compassion. They did it right in verse 23. Take a look at verse 23 and see what it says there. It says, Jesus did not answer a word, so his disciples came and urged him, send her away. She keeps crying out after us. Think about that for a minute. There you have the 12 trying to turn this woman away from Jesus. These are the disciples. These are good people. But they're making a big mistake here. By the way, I find this kind of amusing. There are some commentators that I read, some preachers that I've listened to and read some of their sermons that suggest that the disciples were not saying to Jesus, hey, if you're not going to heal her, just get her out of here. Instead, what they say is, now these disciples, they've never seen Jesus turn anyone down. So instead, the disciples must be saying, Jesus, would you hurry up and heal her and get her out of here? She's really bothering me. She's kind of annoying. That's not what the text says. I mean, that's good logic. That's good inductive logic there. But the text says that they just wanted to get rid of her. Doesn't say anything about go ahead and heal her. The text says, she's a bother. Don't waste our time on her and give her this compassion. She is so annoying. And by the way, that fits logically because she's a foreigner. She's not one of Israel's people. She's not a child of the promise here. She's a foreigner. We're in a foreign place. Just let's get rid of her. You're the boss here, Jesus. Send her on her way. And they would have been surprised, I think, if Jesus had met her need. Because remember in John, when Jesus is in Samaria, which is kind of like a half-Gentile country, those people were half-breeds in Samaria, and they went to get some food, and Jesus is reclining at the well, and someone comes up and he engages that someone in conversation. What gender was she? Female, yeah. And what race was she? A half-breed. Half-Jew, half-not-Jew, half-Gentile, okay? Remember in that story what it says. When they came back and they saw Jesus talking to her, a woman, and a Samaritan, they were surprised. Wow, I can't believe Jesus is talking to this half-breed, this foreigner. How much more surprised would they have been to see Jesus actually meet her need? Not her need, but the Canaanite woman, she's not even half-Jewish. She's completely Gentile. She's a pagan. Nah, I'm afraid that what the disciples had in mind was dismiss this woman, get her out of here. We have more spiritual things to engage in. Wow. Wow, is that ugly? God prevent us from ever becoming like that, huh? They had no spiritual vision, no spiritual eyes to see what was going on here. Even good people can discourage you from seeking God's blessing, but that doesn't mean no compassion is present. Don't let the lack of compassion on the part of Jesus' followers cause you to question his compassion. I am always amazed at how angry Christians who find themselves in the media can portray themselves. Do you understand what I'm talking about? Angry when they're on that talk show or that news show, angry about homosexual marriage. Angry when they're on that special, that television special and being interviewed, angry about abortion. Angry when they get a camera in front of them about how the Bible's being banned in public and we won't stand for this. We're angry. And those things make me angry too, okay? Homosexual marriage, I don't think that's right. Abortion, I don't think that's right. The Bible being banned, I don't think that's right. But listen, if the primary face that you and I show to lost people is a face of anger, we are not revealing to them the compassion of Christ. And we're being just like the 12 with this Canaanite woman. We're discouraging her. We're discouraging them about the saving grace that is found in Jesus Christ. But this woman didn't let Jesus' followers distract her from her mission. Look at verse 25. They just said, get her out of here. And in verse 25, the woman came and knelt before him. Lord, help me, she said. She believed that compassion is present, even when others try to hide it. So Roman numeral 1, compassion is present even when you can't see it. Roman numeral 2, compassion is present even when others try to hide it from you. And Roman numeral 3, compassion is present even when we don't deserve it. Compassion is present even when we don't deserve it. You notice that this incident took place not in Israel. It took place in Tyre and Sidon, a different region outside of what would be called the Holy Land, outside of what would be thought of as a nation of Israel, outside of the kingdom, so to speak. It says that in verse 21. Do you see verse 21? Leaving that place, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. That was not the Holy Land. That was not a holy place. That was a place that really didn't deserve Jesus' presence. He wasn't coming as king of the Canaanites. He was coming as king of the Jews. He was coming, he says in verse 24, for the lost sheep of Israel. That's why he's here. Woman, you don't deserve this healing. I'm here for the lost sheep of Israel. There is nothing in her religious heritage that would make them believe they deserved anything from the God of the Hebrews. They didn't even believe in the God of the Hebrews. They did not deserve this compassion. She did not deserve it. Her daughter did not deserve it. Unworthy is the word that you should have in your mind when you think about this. But listen, she's not alone in this. Catch this. The Bible teaches that none of us are worthy of His compassion. There is no one righteous, the Scripture says. No, not one. God demonstrated His love to us in this, Romans 5 says. While we were still sinners and unworthy, I added the unworthy, Christ died for us. See, none of us were deserving that. We can't look at her and say, well, she doesn't deserve it. We do. That's just not the kind of picture you should get here. The Bible is very clear in teaching that we're not worthy. Christendom has taught that for years. 141 years ago, a woman named Elizabeth Clefane. She was a Scottish woman, by the way. She wrote these words. Upon the cross of Jesus. Do you know the song? Upon the cross of Jesus, mine eyes at times can see the very dying form of one who suffered there for me. And from my stricken heart with tears to wonders I confess the wonders of redeeming love. Do you know the next two words? And my unworthiness. You see, that concept of unworthiness is throughout God's Word. And it's throughout Christian history. And if you come to Jesus proclaiming that you're okay, that you're worthy for love, you'll really never be received by Him. Any unworthiness, I'm sorry, let me say that again. Any worthiness you have comes only into your life after you have been redeemed by Him. But before His saving grace enters your life, you have no unworthiness. I'm sorry, you have no worthiness. Jesus reminds the woman of her unworthiness. He says it's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs. That might seem like a rude thing to you and me, but she didn't react as though it was rude. She didn't say, hey, I can't believe you just said that. I am just as important as anyone in Israel. I'm important as any Jew. She didn't say that. She didn't say, my child is as deserving and a good shot of life as any Jewish kid is. She didn't say that. Her reply to Jesus was a simple cry for grace. Yes, she said, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. You see, Jesus sees that statement as a great expression of persistent faith in His grace and His goodness. And His reply in verse 28 is, woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted. And her daughter was healed from that very hour. You see, no one is worthy to receive anything good from God. Only as we trust in His goodness do we receive anything good from Him. Ironically, a sense of unworthiness makes us more capable of receiving grace than anything else. Let me say that sentence once again, because that's probably the best sentence I've said today. Listen to it again. Ironically, a sense of unworthiness makes us more capable of receiving grace than anything else. Anything else. True faith knows that. and calls on God's grace whenever we're in need. True faith, Roman numeral 1, sees God's compassion even when it's not readily apparent. True faith, Roman numeral 2, isn't put off by those who try to discourage us from seeking God. And true faith, number 3, sees God's goodness in spite of our unworthiness. True faith knows that compassion is present, even when we don't deserve it. You know, last week after church, Bob Michaels said to me, "Hey, Pastor Steve, the Penguins' victory a couple weeks ago in the Stanley Cup playoffs, that was a great example of faith." Now, you knew I'd figure out a way to bring the Penguins into it, didn't you? Cherishing that Stanley Cup. Listen to what he said again. He said, "Pastor Steve, the Penguins' victory a few weeks ago in the Stanley Cup playoffs, that was a great example of faith." And he's right. You know, at the start of that series, the Pens were down 2-0. There are 7 games in the series. It's like the World Series. It's like that's the best of 7 series. And at the start of that, they're down 2-0. And they won the next 2 games, but game 5 was just horrendous. I mean, in game 5, we just couldn't stop the other team from scoring. They were like playing a bunch of high school kids out there, you know? And it was so bad that our coach took the goalie off the ice, not because, man, you're doing a bad job, but just to protect the poor kid's psyche. He probably felt like such a loser out there. Let's get him off the ice, man. We can't allow him to be butchered this way. And pretty much I had given up hope. And all of Pittsburgh in the media had given up hope. It didn't look like there was really any chance for them. And the last game, it came down to the last game, and they were going to play in Detroit. And if you know anything about the Detroit Red Wings, number one, you know they're cheaters because they have a weird arena, okay? It's hard to win there because of that, okay? And number two, if you know anything about the Detroit Red Wings, they are seasoned veterans, buddy. They've been here before. They have won. They have their name on that Stanley Cup so many times. They're good. Number three, we haven't won there. I don't know that we've won there in a long time. Wow. It's game 7. I had no hope. I'm watching the game, but I had no hope that we would win. But they did. And that's why Bob said to me, "Pastor Steve, that took faith to go out there on that ice and play like they did and win. That took faith." Bob, you're absolutely right. It took faith in their skills, faith in their ability, faith in their technique. But I am not encouraging you to have faith in your skills or your ability or your technique. I'm not encouraging you to have faith in yourself. Faith in yourself can be great in sports, but it's bad in Christianity. It's even a bit arrogant in Christianity. God does not want us to approach Him with faith in ourselves. He wants us to approach Him with faith in Himself. The same way this woman did. Humility, trusting in His goodness and His grace. He wants you to believe in His compassion, even when you can't see it. He wants you to trust Him, even when His best followers make you wonder about His compassion. And He wants you to have a heart that says, "I'm not making any demands here, God. I'm just asking you to show me a little grace. How about some crumbs from beneath the table, please?" That's how a person is saved. By seeing their unworthiness before God and seeing God's gift of Jesus on the cross to pay for their sins and receiving Jesus personally. It's not just knowing that. It's not just a head knowledge. Man, I got a head knowledge about a lot of things that don't require any faith. It's really trusting it and saying, "I believe that. I buy that. I will receive Jesus into my life personally." That's how a person is saved. That's how a person experiences healing, by asking in humility. That's how a person grows in their faith, by believing in God's compassion in their life. Do you need to do that? Are you willing to do that? Are you ready to do that? We're going to sing a song, and I don't usually do altar calls, but I'm going to today. It's not really a call. I'm just going to present you the opportunity, if you would like to. Bob, as you're rolling the screen down, as we sing, if you're saying to yourself, "You know what? I've just been having trouble believing in the compassion of Jesus. And I just want to go before Him and just ask Him, in this particular area in my life, can I please have some crumbs from the table? Can I just have whatever you'd like to give me? If you want to give me the whole roast, I'll take that. But I'm just asking in humility, would you give me that, God?" If you have that kind of need, I would invite you to come and kneel at the altar or sit in the front seats here, and then we'll pray together. I would also invite you, I would also invite you, if you realize, you know what, I don't even know for sure that I ever asked Jesus to save me, that it's been more than just a head knowledge, that it's actually been a decision of my will to ask Him into my heart and change me from the inside out. If you need that, then you come too, and we'll pray together. Whatever your need is today, trust in the compassion of Christ. Trust in it even if you can't see it. Trust in it even if good people have made you question it. Trust in it even though you know you're unworthy, because He's so compassionate. The song we're going to sing is "Does Jesus Care?" I love this song. It's a song where in every verse, He asks the same question. He says, "Does Jesus care when things stink in my life?" And with every refrain, He said, "Yeah, He cares. I know He cares." And so we'll sing this. And if you feel like you just need to pray, you come to the altar this morning. Okay, let's stand together as we sing.